Hey folks, this is Kevin. On this week's episode of Risk, you'll hear Alex Liu.
And at this point, the cops are interested. The cops are excited now because they're like, wow, she's really Sherlock Holmes in this bitch. Like, the game is on.
That and more. But first, do you have a story about bad behavior? A time you were guilty of it? Or a time you were wrongly accused of it? Or a time you witnessed it right before your eyes? Bad behavior is the theme of our May 16th show in New York. And if you come to that, you could have a chance to get up on stage and tell your bad behavior story. It's a new experiment. We're going to have our regular curated stories at our May 16th show, but we're also going to give a few audience members chances to share their bad behavior stories. And if you can't come to that show, just pitch us your bad behavior story at risk-show.com/submissions.
We'll be right back.
Now here's the show. Folks, this is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison. This is the South Hill Experiment behind me now, and we're calling this week's episode Lost and Found. I'll tell you something we here at Risk have found. Inspiration. You know, we've been struggling financially, but we have been brainstorming on ways to freshen things up, to kind of make a splash in new ways, to get some mojo working. My latest check-in on Patreon is all about four new ideas we have for trying new things, all based on Risk's mission to help people connect in meaningful ways. And that Patreon check-in is free for all. You don't have to be a member to hear it. So go to patreon.com/risk and look for that check-in. It's called Four Amazing Ways We're Switching Things Up, because we would love to hear your feedback about it. Now, in a little bit, we're going to hear from Monica. But before that, a story from Alex Liu, who is also a rapper. You can find Alex by her alias, Lex the Con Artist, on Instagram, and here she is now with a story we call Suitcase Goose Chase.
So growing up in Taiwan, my favorite movie was Mulan, because like Mulan, I had a mother who wanted me to be a proper lady. And she would always tell me things like, Alex, you walk like a man, you eat like a man, and you type like a man. Can you stop typing so hard on a keyboard? You're going to break the keyboard. Why can't you just be a little bit more gentle? And that was the keyword, gentle. Because in order to be a proper lady to my mother, you had to be acquiescent, demure, and gentle. But it didn't matter how much I was trying to be a proper lady, because I was never going to be the perfect woman when I was living under the same roof as the perfect man. The perfect man was my brother, my older brother. And let me just set the stage for you. In June of 2014, about 9.5 years ago, my brother was getting ready to graduate from Harvard University, pre-law student, while I was a second year at UC Berkeley. But I wasn't really studying. I was kind of pissing my life away in the club. And by the club, I mean the theater club. And I had some alcohol problems. I was in a dead relationship. was kind of depressed, and I put on a lot of weight. So that made me feel very insecure. And so part of me wasn't really looking forward to attending this graduation ceremony of my brother, because I knew my parents were going to be there, and they were going to judge me for being a failure and a loser. But the plan was to travel to Cambridge, Massachusetts, to attend my brother's graduation. And after the ceremony, we were planning to stay at a family friend's house. This family friend lived in New Jersey. Now, as per Asian tradition, before you go to a family friend's house and stay at the family friend's house, you have to bring a gift. And my mom was never shy about bringing a lot of gifts just to show her appreciation. So she had this big black suitcase with a Harvard sticker on it, kind of tacky. And she filled it up with all of the goodies that you could possibly get. Only in Taiwan. Food, clothes, what have you. Really valuable things that we were going to bring to our family friend as a token of our appreciation for letting us stay there. So the day arrives. We go to the ceremony. It's my brother's big day. And we have a great time. I'm a little jealous, but that's okay. I support him. And then the next morning, we plan our trip down to New Jersey. And the plan was to go to South Station. We leave the hotel, we take a cab, and we go all the way down to South Station in Boston. Well, the cab drops us off, and we get all of our bags out, and we go into the station and wait for our train. 30 minutes before our train was about to leave, my mom was the first one who notices. She turns to all of us and she says, "Has anyone seen the big black suitcase with a Harvard sticker on it?" And it just watches the color drains out of all of our faces as we realize that the biggest and the most valuable thing in our possession was not, in fact, in our possession. And we all just went into panic mode. And the first thing that hit my brain was I was looking around, looking at all the people dragging their suitcases with them, just going about their day, not realizing that we were in panic mode. And I thought, any one of these people could have taken our suitcase. And the second thought hits me, that was even more impulsive and even more ridiculous. It's not too late. I can still find it. So without consulting anyone in my family, I just run off. I run over to the lost and found. I see a bunch of suitcases cracked open with their contents missing. I think to myself, I hope that's not ours. And then I run over to the train tracks where there were trains that were about to leave for Philadelphia or Washington, D.C. or whatever. And I just jump on a train and I run up and down the aisles and I ask everyone sitting down, "Have you seen a big black suitcase? Have you seen a big black suitcase? Have you seen a big black suitcase?" Nobody had seen a big black suitcase. And I had to run all the way out and then jump off of the train because the train was about to leave for Philadelphia. So I get off the train and I run out of the station into the T. The T is what they call the metro in Boston. And I asked the station representative, "Have you seen a big black suitcase with a Harvard sticker on it?" And they said no. And it was at this moment when I realized that I was on a wild goose chase. This was never gonna work out. What was I expecting? Even if they had seen a big black suitcase, they would have gone into the T. They would have been somewhere in Boston by now. This was ridiculous. And I started feeling dejected and ready to give up. So I exit the T station. I prepare to go back into South Station. And I see this guy sitting outside eating a sandwich. And I decided to try one more time. I ask him, "Have you seen a big black suitcase with a Harvard sticker on it?" And he said no. And I was preparing to go back into the station when he said, "But there's a security camera right over there." And I turn to look at where he's pointing. And lo and behold, there is a big black security camera right in front of South Station, pointing exactly where our cab had dropped us off. And I was like, holy shit. This is the lead. We have to follow the lead. So I run back into the station and I see my family standing there, dejected, ready to give up. And I say, "No, we're not giving up because there is a new development in this case. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Sherlock Holmes in this bitch, and I'm going to crack this case. Listen, there's a security camera right out there, which means they have to have CCTV footage. We just have to get access to the footage." And they were skeptical, but they decided, why not? Let's try. In order to get access to the footage, we have to contact the police. Oh, everyone say it with me. Nobody wants to talk to the police. The police don't want to talk to us. And they certainly don't care about the plight of an Asian family of four who lost their suitcase. Why would they? They got other things to worry about. So the Boston South Station police, they look exactly as you would imagine them to look. Just two run-of-the-mill white guys in uniforms. And we go up to them, and my mom starts in her demure, gentle, acquiescent voice. "Excuse me, we lost the suitcase, and I was wondering if we could take a look at the security." They were like, "Nope, I don't know what you're talking about. Security footage? That doesn't exist." And inside I was like, "You guys are fucking liars, because there is a security camera right out there. You can't tell me that it doesn't exist." So I get up, stand in front of my mom, look the cops directly in the eyes, and I say, "Listen, I know there's a camera. I know there's footage. I don't know what game you're trying to play, but I don't want any trouble. I just want to see it. I just want to see it." And there was something in the tone of my voice that made them decide to open the security doors and let us into the security room. And once I was in there, I was calling the shots. I was directing the show. I was like, "Fuck the police. I'm in charge now. Look at me. I'm the captain." Turn on the security footage. Roll it back, roll it back, roll it back, roll it back. Oh, stop there. I see us coming out of the cab. I see us take all of our bags out of the cab, including the big black suitcase with the Harvard sticker on it. And then we take the bags and we head back into the station. Except the big black suitcase, we did not take that shit into the station. We left that shit on the curb. And my mom's like, "Oh, how could I have left it on the curb like that?" I said, "Hold on, Mom. Let's keep watching." The cabbie comes out of the cab and he sees that we left the big black suitcase on the curb. And he stands there waiting for like 2 to 3 minutes, hoping that we would come back and grab the suitcase. And obviously we don't. So what he does next is he takes the suitcase and he puts it into his trunk and he closes the trunk and he drives away. And at this point, the cops are interested. The cops are excited now because they're like, "Wow, she's really Sherlock Holmes in this bitch. Like, the game is on." And I said, "Go back a little bit. Let me see what's written on the cab." And it's really blurry, but I can just make it out. It says 617 taxi. And I look it up on Google and I find the phone number on Yelp and I give them a call. I say, "Listen, this is what happened. We left this hotel, we got to this station, and then we left the bag in the cab." And the person on the other side says, "We have the ability to send out a radio broadcast to all the cabs in our network. And if the person who has the suitcase hears it, then he'll let us know." And I hang up and we're feeling a little bit more encouraged now. But there was still a lot of unknowns because who knew if the cabbie was going to hear the message? Who knew if he was going to come back? Maybe he was just planning to make off with a suitcase. And it was at this moment of reflection that I really took note about how my mom was taking this whole situation. She was really blaming herself for it. She was saying, "Oh, I'm so jet lagged. I was so tired. I'm so sorry. This is all my fault." And I think to myself, being a proper lady to my mom isn't just being demure, acquiescent, and gentle. It's also about taking care of the family. It's also about being responsible for everything. It's about holding on to all these unrealistic expectations about being responsible, being careful, managing everything, and saving the day. And I just think to myself, I hope that one day, Mom, you'll realize that you're not alone in this. We're all here to support you. And hopefully one day, you can also realize that you can be yourself. And you don't have to take all this on yourself. I wish you didn't have to deal with this either. 40 minutes later, we get another call. They found the driver. And he was coming back. How fucking crazy is that? Just the cops, their minds were blown. My family, their minds were blown. Because just think about the odds. This was the entire city of Boston, all the cabs in Boston. What are the odds that that one cabbie would hear the message and decide to come back with our bag? But we still couldn't sit still until the moment we got another call that told us the cabbie's outside. I remember my dad walking out of the station with this big cash tip. And then he comes back with the big black suitcase with the Harvard sticker in tow. And we cheered, we had tears in our eyes, we're celebrating. And my mom turned to the entire family and she announced, and she declared, "Alex is so brave. Alex is amazing. Without you, we would have never found this suitcase." So that was the first time that I really felt like I was seen for who I was and appreciated for who I was. Because throughout my whole life, I felt like I was doing things wrong. I was eating wrong, I was walking wrong, I was just being wrong. But that day at South Station, I was 100% myself. I was forceful, I was brash, I asked for what I wanted, and I was not a proper lady. And you know what? That shit fucking worked, dude. And my parents saw that it worked. And I felt appreciated for it. I felt affirmed for it. I no longer felt like a loser. I no longer felt like I was insecure for who I was. So after that entire graduation incident, I went back home. I finished my degree. I started my first job. And then I immediately quit that first job and decided to become a rapper and tour the country, which at this point I've done 4 times by now. But sometimes I still feel very insecure. And I feel imposter syndrome, and I wonder if I took the right path. But when that happens, I think back to that day at South Station, and I think about what my mom told me. And I say to myself, you know what? She's right. I may not be a proper lady, but I am amazing, and I can save the day. Just like Mulan. Thank you very much.
Figure this out. Freeze there. Rotate us 75 degrees around the vertical, please. Times 10. Enhanced. All right.
That's enhanced.
Enhanced section A6.
I enhanced the detail. And?
I think there's enough to enhance. Release it to my screen.
Enhance the reflection in her eye.
Let's run this through video enhancement.
Edgar, can you enhance this?
Hang on.
That's enhanced.
I can use them to enhance this photograph.
Got an image enhancer that can bitmap?
Enhance?
Enhance.
Freeze and enhance.
Can you enhance the image from here?
Can you enhance him right here?
I'm telling you, I will not enhance your child.
That's enhanced.
Can you enhance it?
Can you enhance it?
Can we enhance this?
Can you enhance it?
Hold on a second, I'll enhance. Can you enhance it? Can we enhance this?
Can you enhance it?
Just enhance. Hold on a second, I'll enhance. Can we enhance this?
Can you enhance it?
Stop. And go back to the part about the door again.
We'll be right back.
Calling all pop culture enthusiasts.
Are you obsessed with all things celebrity?
Do you live for the drama, the laughs, and the unexpected moments that unfold on social media?
Then you're going to want to tune in to the Comments by Celebs podcast.
Join us 3 times a week as we deep dive into every aspect of pop culture.
Whether it's dissecting the latest trends or just chatting about your favorite celebs, Comments by Celebs has you covered.
We have new episodes out every week. Follow and listen to Comments by Celebs on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Risk, this is EABS, and Jowby behind me now, and we just heard an interstitial about enhancing it by our own Hope Brush, following the enhancing and entrancing Alex Liu. Folks, one of our Patreon patrons, Steve S., recently sent us this note. I discovered Risk in 2023, during the darkest period of my life. Risk has run the gamut for me, from being a life buoy, to comfortable companion, to pleasant distraction, to source of side-splitting joy. I hope my support will enable the team to continue to provide this utterly unique content. Thank you so much, Steve. And believe me when I say we could not keep Risk going without our listeners' support. And here's a shout out to our latest 2 members, Will Minner and NK. And folks, don't forget to get on over to patreon.com/risk as soon as possible, even if you're not a member there, because for free, we have a new check-in called 4 Amazing Ways We're Switching Things Up about our latest ideas of how to keep Risk running, and we'd love to hear your thoughts about that check-in. Now, next up, we're going to hear from Monica with a story they worked so thoughtfully on with our story producer, Taj Easton. Here's Monica now with a story we call Nothing to Be Ashamed Of.
I'm an only child, and I grew up without a lot of friends, which was really difficult because no matter how much I tried, I just couldn't make any friends. I was really lonely. So most of my life, I only had one friend, who was also kind of my cousin. So on a beautiful summer day in 1990, my cousin slash friend and I are 13 years old. We're at my grandparents' house. And my friend and I were inside because we had just discovered my uncle's porn magazine stash. We're 13-year-old boys and we're very curious and very excited. One of us kept watch for our parents while the other looked through the magazines. Later, we came together and we discussed what we saw in the magazines. I asked him the question, what was it that you liked? What was his favorite thing that he saw? He says he really liked Playboy, with the centerfold piece where the girl looked like the girl next door. You know, very natural and beautiful, just laying in some hay in a barn somewhere. He asked me what my favorite thing is. My favorite was the centerfold, where the girl was wearing insanely high heels, lingerie, really long fingernails, really caked on makeup, really big Texas hair, and she was wearing every piece of jewelry she owns. One day when my grandmother was watching me and my younger cousin, I was playing with her and we were playing in my aunt's room. My aunt, being the party girl she was, she had lots of fun clothes. Glittery heels, dresses, and lots of jewelry. My cousin was playing dress up and I was playing along with her. She put on heels, I put on pantyhose. The pantyhose felt confusing, but it felt nice. It was exciting and terrifying all at the same time. After this, I had sort of become obsessed with everything feminine. I would seek out women's clothes, makeup, and heels, and I would always try to wear them. I liked the way that I looked in them. It just made me look that much closer to the porn stars in the magazines and then the videos. It was gratifying and taboo. As I got older, try as I might, I could never get girls to spend that much time with me. Maybe they saw me as underconfident, or maybe I wasn't interesting to them. They would question why I shaved my body or didn't grow a beard, and why I ate healthy, of all things. Generally, I did try to keep my body somewhat feminine by trimming my body hair so I could look that much closer to the porn stars in the magazines and in the videos. So I suppose that might be part of the reason why they didn't want to stay with me. I don't know. However, despite all this dressing and drag, I wasn't gay. I wasn't bi or anything like that. I just liked the way that I looked. I think deep down, since girls didn't like me, dressing up in drag was the closest thing I could have to not being alone anymore. I lived as a crossdresser for a good portion of my life. I did it off and on whenever I could, but high school, college, and work kept me pretty busy. When it started, I was just in high heels, some lingerie and lipstick. But as time went on, it got more and more intricate. I was learning different things and I could buy my own stuff. So I bought all these different outfits, like pink velour tracksuits from Victoria's Secret, micro skirts or cat suits that you would wear to a nightclub, fishtail prom gowns, and even suits as if I was going to work. And of course, I had to have matching heels, makeup, and wigs. I started in this humble sort of way, just wearing a couple different things, but then cut to 20 years later, I had to have perfectly contoured face with immaculate eyebrows and eyelashes longer than my pinky finger, wigs for every occasion, and tons of jewelry. I felt beautiful. No one had ever told me that I was beautiful before. No one had ever told me they loved me besides my family, because I still didn't really have any friends. Dressing in drag was the closest thing I had to not feeling alone. So when I did meet girls that did take an interest in me, I would stop dressing in drag. When I did tell women about dressing in drag in the past, they never handled it well. It was always made to feel like what I was doing was wrong and that I was disgusting. So I kept it limited to who knew. My best friend knew, the one from the beginning of the story. Eventually, I met one girl who seemed to take it well. We went shopping and bought all kinds of things. And then she told me she wanted to take me on a date in drag in a week. I was really excited and really nervous. I couldn't sleep. Seriously, I don't think I slept at all that whole week. She sat me down and asked me if I wanted another name for myself. I said I'd never really thought of that before. She told me I looked like Monica from Friends. It was around this time my friend started asking me, to what end was I doing this? He asked me if I was gay. I said no. Then he said, why then? Then he said, and I'll never forget this, sticking feathers up your butt does not make you a chicken. That just plain hurt. At one point, my parents discovered my life of dressing as a woman. My mom confronted me and cried. My father wouldn't speak to me for weeks. One day, I'm heading out to my car to go to work, and my dad rushes out to the door and confronts me and asks me if I'm gay. I say no. He says, I don't want this happening in my house. I say, okay. I go to work and I'm pretty numb. I pretend like none of this ever happened. So my life continued. I graduated college, I got a job. A dead-end job, but a job that kind of paid, but not enough where I could afford my own place to be able to dress up and not be judged. I was really depressed for most of my life because I was just stuck in a rut. One day, I'm in the backyard while my parents were on the patio drinking and listening to music. I'm sitting in the grass and my dog is dropping tennis balls in my lap, wanting to play. And I wanted to play with him so bad. But all I could think about was how I was going to kill myself in a little while. I was really hard for obvious reasons. So I'm hysterically crying. And I go upstairs to my room and I lay down. And I'm crying over and over and over. And I fall asleep. I just pass out because I was crying so much. And I wake up the next morning and I'm pissed off that I didn't kill myself because now I have to go to work. So I'm on my way into work and I'm listening to this podcast by writer-director Kevin Smith. In the show, he's talking about following your dreams. His whole credo is why not? He's talking about what a director does and he's checking off all these boxes and I'm listening to all of it and I'm like, oh, that's me. Oh, I do that. I do that. I can do that. And that was the moment that my life was going to get better. The only way that it would is if I changed literally everything about myself. Everything that made me uncomfortable, I did the opposite. Everything I was afraid of, I faced it. Life just started to kind of work out really well. I booked a trip to Australia. I'd never even been out of the country before, let alone my own state. I came back and I was doing improv and stand-up. Getting on stage terrified me, but I did it. And I started making my own movies, writing scripts. I was doing all this stuff that finally made me feel good. Something like that gave me purpose in life. The other thing I did was I stopped cross-dressing because cross-dressing was also kind of damaging because of how much money I was spending on all this stuff. It's like what Dolly Parton said, it costs a lot to look this cheap. Shortly after that, I met a girl I felt really good about. She really seemed to like me. We were dating for about 6 months, and then I told her I loved her. And she told me she loved me. No one had ever said that they loved me before. She validated me in a way that no one had ever validated me before. So we move in together, and I move all of my stuff that I had in my apartment and also in my parents' house because I have a big boy apartment now. So I had this box of receipts and bank statements at my parents' house that I brought to my new place. I'm at work one day and she opens this box of receipts and she finds a receipt for women's clothes from a long time ago. This made her start digging. So she went through every box, hard drive, phone, tablet, you name it, she went through it, searching for something. She got into my computer and she searched through every nook and cranny of my computer. Eventually, she found some photos of me dressed up in drag. So I come home from work a month after we're living together and she sits me down. She says, "We have to talk." Those infamous words. She looked at me with this disgusted look and she says, "I saw pictures of you dressed in drag and I found receipts of women's clothes that you bought." And she said, "You are disgusting. How could you do that to yourself? I don't want to be with you anymore because you are a liar." Among many other choice words that can be triggering for people that I won't say here. That look she gave me and those things she was saying will be burned into my brain for the rest of my life. She kicked me out of the house, and she refused to pay me thousands of dollars she owed me from rent and other various things that we bought together. She then proceeded to send everything to her family and friends to make fun of me, threaten me with violence, threatening me with blackmail, and I felt like what had happened to me was really unfair. I was having panic attacks for the first time in my life. I had anxiety for the first time in my life. She outed my past to the entire world. All of my coworkers knew now of my private life as a crossdresser. My family and friends knew. My grandmother knew. My life had been completely turned upside down. I was afraid I was going to lose my job, my friends. I was afraid everyone was just going to stop hanging out with me. But the outpouring of compassion from people was amazing. I couldn't believe how much support I received after that. It was just people telling me she was wrong, that I wasn't a liar for not telling her those things. She was the one that was wrong. I didn't tell her because I was uncomfortable, and that is a difficult conversation to have when virtually everyone I had told before had just never taken it well. No matter how much support I did have, though, I was filled with anxiety. Because I did lose lots of people in my life as well. People were threatening me, they were making fun of me, and I just wanted to get the hell out of my life. I wanted to leave and move somewhere else. I didn't want to be here anymore. So I started doing what I could to take control of my life, by first helping others feel accepted and less alone. So I started volunteering in my community at animal shelters. I was tutoring underprivileged kids. I was a big brother. I was hanging out with the elderly, helping with conservation efforts at the zoo, working in hospitals, reading to sick kids. Anything I could to make those who had been given up on or made to feel less than, I wanted to help. I was on Instagram one day and I saw Kevin Smith had posted something on his page about a scholarship. And I was thinking to myself, how did I fix my life the first time? And I thought about the Why Not credo I learned from him from that fateful podcast that saved my life. So I applied for the scholarship. Part of the scholarship process was that you had to submit a movie that you had made, pitch him a new movie you want to make, and you had to write an essay about a hardship you faced. Now look, I am a thin, white, straight, middle-class male. I don't have any real hardships compared to what other people have to go through. But I said, you know, I'm going to write about what happened to me with this girl. So I sent him the movie I made. I pitched him a movie that I want to make. And I sent him the essay about what happened with the girl. Months go by and I don't hear anything. And I'm thinking, nothing ever works out for me. I am not going to get this. But then I got a call from the school saying, Kevin read your essay and watched your movie and he loves them both and believes you have potential in this industry. And we want to give you the scholarship. I dropped to my knees and I'm crying like I've never cried before. It was the most validating thing in the world to know your hero in life saw your stuff, heard your hardship, and validated how you felt. I don't hate the people who think I'm disgusting or wrong for what I did, or the women who could never be with me because of what I used to do. It's difficult to find someone in general to like you as you. All I know is, I accept me. I learned consent for your story is no one's choice but your own. I learned I had nothing to be ashamed of. And I learned that it does get better.
is Risk. This is Julian Lage behind me now, and we just heard from Monica. Now remember, folks, the next Risk live shows are May 16th in New York at Caveat and May 21st in LA at the Lyric Hyperion. At that New York show, we're doing something new. The theme of the stories that night will be bad behavior. I'll be hosting, and we'll have three storytellers tell prepared stories like at any Risk show. But we'll also be giving three people in the audience in the second half of the show after the intermission a chance to share their stories about bad behavior. 5 minutes each for those. Now, we'll also have little moments in the show where I'll give instructions for how you can meet someone you've never met before there at the show, kind of like how we do at our social events. And if you do make it to that May 16th show in New York, let us know how you liked the new interactivity that we're experimenting adding to the mix. And for everyone else who can't make it to that May 16th show in New York, pitch us your bad behavior stories, no matter where you live. We're at risk-show.com/submissions.
We'll be right back. We're back.
Folks, on Thursday, we'll have a look back at an entire live show from when the podcast was still new. It's Live from Albany, featuring, among other things, a big ol' heapin' helpin' of Hamboo. But that's Thursday, and folks, today's the day. Take a risk.